Hello and welcome to Fueling Around with me, Jason Plato, and the man I've always wanted to shunt through the barricades. It's Dave Vitti.
Hello.
Fueling Around is powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance. Mate, that's a cracking line that you've knocked up there, Dave.
Well, thank you very much. And actually, just to let the listeners into a little secret, is that when Jason was reading that originally, and I said, do you understand that? Do you get that? And he was quite offended the fact that he wasn't fully au fait with, you know, the back catalogue of indeed today's mystery person. I nearly gave it away. I'm not going to.
Good lad. Well, our guest today is a gentleman who can, and indeed does, do most jobs in show business. Mm-hmm. Not content with being a top-selling musician and acclaimed actor, he's now also on the radio and DJing mm-hmm. at festivals. In fact, taking jobs from people like me and you, Dave.
You know it.
Yeah, it is, of course. The yeah, one and only.
You know, you just wanted to call me an old shunt, didn't you? That's what it was.
And those are the dulcet tones of the one and only Mr. Martin Kemp. Martin, hey,
well, how you welcome, doing, boys?
Mate. I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, good.
All right, listen, it's great to have you on, Martin. Thank you for joining us on Fueling Around. As Jason says, you're a busy man these days. So talk to us, please. For those that are watching, we will see that you are clearly in a radio studio. Tell us about Greatest Hits Radio and the show on there.
I have a lovely show on a Friday evening, you know, just before Des comes on. I absolutely love it. The whole idea of me doing a Friday night was that, you know, I go out all over the country and I do mm-hmm. back to the 80s gigs. I've been doing them for like 3 or 4 years now. We do it all the time, 3 a week. We have the best of times, like 1,000 people all going wild and just singing their hearts out.
Brilliant.
And I wanted to do a show with Greatest Hits that people can listen to before they go out mm-hmm. or on their journey to the gig
yep.
that kind of matched. And it was absolutely, you know, Greatest Hits plays every record I love.
Yeah.
So, you know, my heart is in 70s, 80s and 90s. So it's a perfect match.
And that gets everyone in the mood for, you know, mm-hmm. for all your gigs, I guess.
Yeah, of course. That's exactly why I wanted to do it. I wanted, you know, going there in the car, they can put the radio on and they can start singing along really early.
It's what they call preloading, I think, isn't it? You know, obviously being responsible, but obviously preloading in terms of the excitement and the whole build-up to what will be essentially an excellent night out. That's what I think it's all about.
Yeah, that's, I think that's right. I'm not sure.
it's like the musical equivalent of an early tequila, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It's a musical equivalent of the bridge before we get to the chorus.
Yes.
Ah,
like it.
Yeah, you know it.
Martin, I think I know the answer to this one, but in terms of obviously, you know, the acting and the music, if you had to choose one or other and you were only allowed to do one of those two strings to your many bows, which one would it be and why?
I just couldn't tell you that. I couldn't answer that because I see them all as the same thing. I see them all inside this beautiful bubble that we are all working inside called entertainment. Mm. We can choose which part of that bubble you want to sit in. When I was growing up, when I was in a band, it was impossible because everybody in this country liked to pigeonhole you as to what you were and didn't let you move out of that pigeonhole. Then I went to live in the States for a few years and I realized that people there were allowed to do all sorts of things inside this bubble called entertainment. And that now happens here as well. I see everything that I do as my hobby.
Mm-hmm.
I never see the fact that I'm working. And that's why, you know, Michael Caine, who retired when he was 90, he lived in that same bubble. He didn't retire because he was fed up with it and wanted to rest. Mm. He kept going till he was 90 because he loved what he does.
And that's the same as me.
Well, that's a joyous place to be, isn't it?
Mm.
So the topic of this, obviously, this podcast is cars. And obviously, you're into your motors. And I can imagine that your car history is maybe kind of linked to the success of Spandau Ballet through ups and downs. Yeah. So where does it all begin?
It all began, my first car in very early 80s, kind of 1981, I suppose, was a Lancia Beta.
Okay.
Oh,
remember
nice.
The Lancia?
Yeah, I do.
It was a beautiful little thing. Lancia Beta. And the back, the window, back window used to fold down, and it was only that bit that was convertible. And it was a lovely little car. And that's where it all began.
Wow. Do you remember the registration number?
No, not
there we go.
Now,
that's
listen,
the perfect answer.
Listen, no. Listen, Jason.
I couldn't tell you what the registration number is of my car that I have now.
Thank you very much, Martin. Dave will obviously explain sheepishly, I guess.
This is an ongoing thing that Jason and I are slightly at odds with, because I thought it was quite normal to be able to remember the registrations of cars that you've had over the years. I can remember the reg of every car that I've ever owned, and in fact, every car that my dad ever had.
Oh, from that's
the
just
age
weird.
Well, exactly. And you're not the first person to say this now, Martin, actually, because I thought it was normal, but a few people recently have said that it's a bit odd. Jason, likewise, is very much on the that's weird fence. So I'm now starting to think that maybe this slightly Rain Man affliction of mine isn't strictly normal.
No, it's not normal at all. It's weird. You know, but when I was a kid, after the Lancia Beta, I was kind of changing my cars every year. So I would have to hold a million numbers in there. In my
true, true.
And listen, I can't remember what happened yesterday, let alone the cars in 1980. But, you know, I loved changing the cars back then, you know, and I was doing all right with Spandau Ballet, making a couple of quid. And, you know, the only kind of real expense and the only thing that I ever really spent my money on then were cars.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's,
you and me both.
We'd have been the same, wouldn't we?
That's what we spend it all on, isn't it?
Yeah.
Except, you know, unfortunately, myself and Jason haven't had the, you know, rock star success. But I think if we did, then certainly we'd be straight down to the nearest kind of dealership as well, wouldn't we? Kind of getting whatever the, you know, just fantasy stuff, like a kid in a sweet shop.
Well, it was a little bit, you know, because I went from that Lancia Beta. And then I bought, and this is one of the cars that I wished I still had. You know, we all had those moments of madness when we sell those beauties.
Yeah.
And we wish we had them back. We wish we never got rid of them. And it was a Porsche 911E.
Okay.
Really old style.
Yeah.
And it was beautiful. Absolutely beautiful car. It was, you know, like you know, I drive a 911 now, but pretty much now they're like go-karts that you can put into auto and drive them, you know, they just drive for themselves. But in the old days, in those 911E, 911S cars, you really had to push them. And it was kind of, they were manual, they were only 2.4, so you had to put your foot down all the time. The back end was heavy, so you would lose it around a roundabout on a wet day. So you had to know how to drive it. And it was so much fun.
Do you know what? I totally agree. I mean, I know you're into your 911s, me too, but the old ones did require a certain way of driving them. And actually, they gave you feelings which weren't nice. You know, if you went quick, the front would start wandering around and almost like a speedboat. But if you you said, if you drove it, And you told her who was boss, they were brilliant to drive, but did they have a temper?
It did, but you always had to have your toe down on it. You could never let it kind of drift, which it was more like driving a motorbike than it was a car. It was a lovely thing to have, and it was one of those that got away, you know, I sold for some reason that I can't remember. To be honest, I suppose to step up to the 911 SC next, which was the classic 1980s car.
Yeah.
You know, my brother had a red one, a red 911 SC, which was the classic yuppie car of the 80s.
with the big whale tail off the back of it, wasn't it? Did it have the big whale?
And the next one for me was a Carrera. Four-wheel drive, beautiful silver thing. And that had the whale tail as well on it. But early 80s. And it was, I mean, beautiful. I drove it down to, we were recording in the south of France. And I drove it down to there. And there was, I drove that. The other guy in the band was driving the Lotus Esprit. And the drummer was driving a Lotus Europa.
Oh, right, yeah.
You know, these small, tiny little Lotus Europa, the box
The flat
car.
Back.
beautiful little thing. Yeah. And as we're going down, you know, we're passing all the lorries and whizzing past, you know, going 100 miles an hour down the road. And then we're passing all them. And then all of a sudden the Europa, like it should, blew up. Right, because they always blew up. It blew up, and so before you get into the south of France and Saint-Tropez, all the lorries that we passed earlier on,
they were coming back.
They were passing us.
Excellent.
I can't tell you about the hand signals they were giving us, but it wasn't a wave.
Was it the Lotus Esprit that came out the water in the James Bond film? Was that the Esprit or was that a different one?
Yeah, that was the Esprit.
Yeah, that was the Esprit. Yeah.
That was Steve Norman, the sax player, had one of those.
Mm-hmm.
And my other mate, the drummer, had the Europa. But they were both as unreliable as each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great handling cars, though.
Yeah, well, what happened when we were racing down to South of France was that on the straight, I would always beat them. You know, the power in the 911 would just overtake. But as soon as we got into the south of France and it was kind of winding roads, you know, down to Monaco and stuff, the Lotuses would just leave me for nothing.
Just on those twisty switchbacks and everything. So this is a question for both of you, I suppose, as sort of two big fans of the 911. And you were talking before about the fact that the old ones, you know, had something about them and they used to bite you if you got it wrong.
Yeah.
Do you find then that the newer ones, are they a little bit too tame and a little bit too soft? And do they therefore not have that same kind of punch that maybe the older ones have?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. Yeah. I just find it's very easy to flick it into auto and not even bother to putting it into sport.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I drive without knowing that it's not even in sport. Mm. And so the revs are lower and it changes on its own. It gets used to how you drive.
Yeah.
So it changes the revs on certain times. They're not as much fun as the old ones.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the old ones you used to have to push and drive properly.
Yeah.
I think as soon as we got into, it came out of the SC, they kind of lost it a little bit.
Well, see, I'm not sure I agree with that. I think they're the best of both worlds now. So you can just tune out, cruise along, and still be doing epic speeds. Mm. But it's
yeah, you can. But
if you turn all the toys off and you're a bit brave, oh, they've still got a bit of a tempo, which is great.
Absolutely.
But the level and the speed is so much greater now. The accident is going to be substantially bigger.
Of course. Yeah. But we can't drive that fast. The engines are so big now. Yeah. What I think I enjoyed was when it was only 2.4, when it got up to 3.2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought that was when it was at its best.
Yeah.
Mm. I think it was the SC that got to 3.2. And I thought that is when it was at its best. Mm.
Did you ever go into anything leery, like turbos or anything like that?
No, I didn't. No, it's the car. I will get a turbo one day. The old 1980s Porsche turbo. I will get one one day. It's the one that I promised myself to buy. And I've never had one. And I will get it. I will get it.
Greatest car in the world. My first was a 993 Turbo S. I still had that now.
Yeah.
And that was what they called that was originally christened the Widowmaker.
Yeah, yeah.
And my God, was it dodgy.
Was this to do with the lag as well, Jason? Obviously, not just the power, but because of the lag on the turbo, that suddenly it would just kick in and put you in a ditch.
Yes. But also it was before all electronic toys, you know. Yeah. I don't even think it had ABS, you know. I mean,
I don't think it did.
But it certainly didn't have any traction control. In fact, that was your right foot or your fear gland would go off. Hopefully you tune it right. But that would go off and stop you finding trees and stuff. But I mean, I spun mine quite a few times on the road.
Yeah.
Not trying hard,
no.
Just squeezing the throttle on a wet day and then whoop. Round the way.
I think it's quite telling as well, Martin, that actually, you know, there's a couple of times when myself and Jason have gone to events, and we did one recently and Tim Harvey was there as well. And I think it's quite telling that when you see professional drivers turn up and they can have any car in the world, right? And these, you know, everything on the market, but both the likes of Jason and the likes of Tim Harvey and many others, they turn up in Porsches. And I think that just says it all, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, do you know what it is? It's because you can take it out and you can push it and you can have fun in it. but it's also a car that you can use every day.
Yeah.
And you can park it and you don't worry about it. And it's, I think it's the perfect sports car. It's something that I fell in love with when I was a kid. And like I say, I still have one today, you know.
There's a man, Dave, who understands his cars.
Absolutely. I veered away from it a couple of times.
Well, this is
this was
going to be my next question. It's labelled as worst car or greatest motoring mistake, but I won't be quite so presumptuous.
No, I veered away from it a couple of times. Once, I made a terrible mistake one time because I swapped my 911 in for, now don't laugh, right? A 944.
Okay.
A 944 in the 80s, right? And I bought it, and then my mum and dad used to live down in Bournemouth. Mm-hmm. And I drove it down to Bournemouth to see them. And I was so disappointed in it. On my way back, I stopped in the garage and I bought another 911.
No way, did you?
Yeah. So I had the 944 for about a week.
I mean, it's an Audi, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Well, it was nothing. Yeah. It's a Porsche engine, isn't it?
Yes.
The 924.
Yeah, that
was the
dog,
Volkswagen, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
And then the 944 had the proper engine in it, but it still wasn't the same. And so we owned this 944 for a week.
And I reckon I know exactly where you went, because I think that you stopped off at that Porsche garage in Chiswick when you're coming back in towards London. I bet you is that one there
that
on the left hand side, isn't
you
it?
Know
yeah,
exactly,
yeah. I know exactly.
Do you remember what it's called?
I don't actually know.
The Checkered Flag.
Oh, was it? Okay. Yes. Just before you get to the brewery. I know exactly where you are.
The How Checkered Flag.
I've had enough of this. Yeah. I want one of them again.
Because I bought another car from there, which was Checkered Flag. Which was probably the most beautiful car that I ever owned. It was an E-Type 4.2. Oh, nice. And it was absolutely perfect. Like, taken back to the metal, galvanized. It was silver wire wheels. It was bright red. It was so beautiful. And, you know, the difference was, when I had that car, every turning that I came out of, people would let me out.
Right.
People would let me out.
Is that right?
And wave to me, right? And think, and just look at the car. And then when I changed it back for another 911, people would wave to me, but just in a different way.
and then had you been driving a red car from an Italian mark, they'd be spitting on you.
Yeah.
They'd hate you. But even more than that.
It's a clenched wave, isn't it? It means something entirely different.
Oh, it's the coffee beans, isn't it?
Yeah. It was one of those. But it was probably the most beautiful car I'd ever driven. And it was probably the most dangerous as well.
Right.
You know, it was far too fast for the body and for everything that it had in there. You know, I say it could go 150 miles an hour. If you went 150 miles an hour going past the lorry, you'll be dead.
Yeah.
You'll be gone.
You we'll do that. Yeah, I did a trip from Birmingham down to Geneva to recreate the famous Geneva Motor Show trip in the E-Type. And we had, we did. We got it right up then. You're right. It didn't feel comfy.
Did yours have power steering?
No.
Oh, see, mine had the original power steering. The first type, the stuff they were using in America was put into this one. Right. And if you went past a lorry, you were changing lanes. You had no choice.
So, 911s, have you done any track days or anything like that, Martin?
No, I haven't. I always, it's something I'm meant to do, that I'd like to do. I've never done it because I just wouldn't fancy killing my car.
Mm. Oh, you won't?
They absolutely...
You won't. You just need some different tyres, that's all.
Yeah, I don't want to buy a round of tyres just to do a track day.
Oh, yeah, I guarantee you would.
No, it's something I've never done, but I will do one day.
Yeah, I think you should get him out, Jason. I think there's.
But do you know what? Yeah, why not?
That's
an afternoon at Silverstone, isn't it? As long as I can come as well, then we'll have
the PR people at Porsche, and we'll get one of their cars.
Yeah, absolutely.
That'd be better, wouldn't it?
Yeah. That is a brilliant idea. Here's a question for you, Martin. Obviously, your very successful and famous children, Roman and Harley, have they inherited your love of cars through their own kind of success in the media world, or are they not really interested?
No, not really. You know, my boy likes a nice car. He's, mm-hmm. He's into his Mercedes okay. and stuff, but you know, not it's not an obsession. I would say, you know, it's nothing like I had when I was a kid, you know, like the car was the most important thing that you had to have, like not just to have fun in it, but almost as a status symbol. It's not like that anymore, you know.
Yeah.
Roman's more obsessed with his work.
I was going to say, I think times have changed, haven't they? I think, I don't think that, you know, the car is as big a deal now as it was for us.
No.
These days, I don't think.
I totally agree with you. And actually, we've sort of had this sort of intimated by people before. And I think it's a generational thing, isn't it? You know, in sort of our own kids as they grow up, regardless of their own success or wealth or whatever. Yeah. I think it's just one of those things whereby you can imagine almost in 5 or 10 years' time that they see transport differently. It's not about necessarily owning that set of wheels, because they might just as soon have an app and effectively just go everywhere by Uber. But, you know, it's joking aside, but that's the way they see transport, though, isn't it? You know, as a utilitarian functional thing.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, when we were kids, Jason, you most probably grew up the same as I did, where all you wanted was a Cortina.
Yeah.
You know, that was the dream to get a Cortina. And there was always one kid who had one that everybody else piled in the back.
I was that kid. I had one.
Yeah, did you? Yeah, so you know, that was our dream. Mm-hmm. And then to be able to own a 911 when I was in the band was ultimate status symbol, you know. So but I don't think it's the same now.
Mm. Now, well, also I think back then cars generally were crap. The ones which we could afford. So actually there was this desire to get out of the garbage selection of cars which were available to us. They were slow, they were thirsty, the heaters didn't work. I mean, I had a Beetle, then a 2CV, then another Beetle. And whilst it was, you know, the fun days, God, they were slow. Whereas nowadays, even the cheapest car, God, they're rapido, aren't they? And everything works, you know, got stereos, heaters. So I think the whole technology thing is, it's not like it was.
Oh, absolutely. Listen, when I grew up, my dad had an old Ford Popular. Mm-hmm. And we lived in Islington in London. And it took us 4 days to get to Southend. We had to stop over in a lay-by and put a tent up on the way down. And a little while ago, I was on eBay and I saw this old Ford Popular. That was exactly the spitting image of my dad's. Mm. And, you know, I have all these memories, me and Gary, my brother, sitting in the back of that, doing our Sunday days out.
Yeah.
And I bought it and I got it home. And when I opened the car door, the smell of the leather just took me back to being it took me back to being 7 years old with my mum and dad. Mm. It was the most incredible thing. And it was a real shame, because I tried so hard to make that car work, you know, and I to get it going properly, and it was just nonstop breaking down on me. Mm. And in the end, I got so fed up with it, I moved it on. But for the time I had it, it was such a pleasure.
Isn't it interesting that old cars, they do have that smell? Well, I wonder if modern cars, give them 10 years up the road or 20 years up the road, I don't think they'll have that smell.
I don't think they will either. And I think it's because they tend to be far more. I mean, when you remember the cars when we were kids and the cars that our parents had, they were, well, for me anyway, my dad always chose cars that he could work on. My dad was never a mechanic, but my dad had a basic engineering background, which meant that he could do most handy dad kind of jobs. You know, he could change the alternator and he could change the spark plugs.
Yeah.
He could change the air filters and these kind of things. And that's why he was always a Ford man, right? He was always, you know, I think you were one or the other. You're either Vauxhall or Ford when we were kids, you know, and you didn't really sort of cross crossed swords really on that. You were one or the other. He was a Ford man. He had a Cortina. I then inherited the Cortina. I had a Fiesta. I had a Capri. But these were just cars that my dad could work on. But I think you're right in terms of the smells, because they were oily, petrol-y things, and they used to give up. Whereas now they're just sealed units, aren't they? And you can't really get near them and do it that way. And I don't think they'll ever smell the same way.
I tell you what it is. I think it's because the leather seats were infused with weight cigarettes. Because I remember clearly as a kid, right, sitting in the back of my dad's Ford Popular, and we'd all be squashed in the back with my nan in the middle. Mm. And my nan would be smoking weight cigarettes, like more than you can ever imagine. And the car would be filled with smoke. And you'd open the window just a little bit. And my dad would say, "Shut the window, boy. You'll give your nan a crack in the neck."
And I bet. See, I'm now remembering my nan, and she always had this ability to have a fag on, and whether it be in her fingers or in her mouth, the ash was that long.
Yeah, it never
snap off. It didn't matter what she was doing. I'm sure if she was on the trampoline outside now, it'd still be on there.
It defied all gravity, didn't it?
It did. Yeah. My dad would always have a box of tissues on the back window.
Yes. What was
no
that
one
about?
Could ever reach them.
Yeah. What was that about? Why did that happen? My granddad, same. What were they there for?
Do
you know
next
what?
Next to the World Cup willy. With the nodding head.
But you know what? All these nostalgic old memories, and you know, you often kind of think, is that just something that was left in the 70s or the 80s? But I can sort of say, you know, in with pleasure, the fact that I recently made a little documentary thing about the Ford Cortina with Gaz Tok. Do you remember from the presenter from the 80s, from Gareth? Yeah. And so we actually went back and found a load of these old cars. And the beautiful thing was that even in the year 2021 or whatever it was when we made this, we'd open these garages and it just suddenly took you back. And all of those old smells were exactly there, you know, from these old Mark I and Mark II Cortinas. Yeah. It was fabulous.
It's an amazing thing. And, you know, for the time I had the Ford Popular, I would just literally go in the garage, open the door, sit in there and smell it. Because it used to take me back to my mum and dad.
Do you remember those days you had to think about starting the car?
Yeah.
You had to give it some thought, didn't you?
You had to plan ahead.
You did, didn't you? Right. I drove it an hour ago. It's not sure it'll be warm. Yeah. So a bit of choke. The knob. Choke? What was that about?
Yeah. The battery. You had to make sure the battery was on charge. I always remember when we grew up, you know, we were really poor when we grew up. My mum and dad never had any money. And I always remember every weekend you actually couldn't go in a certain part of the living room because the battery was on charge, ready for my dad to use it on a Monday morning.
How good's that? You're banned from that room.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. The total opposite then, I guess, of this conversation and these beautiful old cars that smell of petrol and oil is what we have now with the electric revolution. Yeah. We know that obviously you're a big Porsche man, but electric cars, have you? Would you? What's your viewpoint?
I haven't yet, but I will do in time when the right one comes up. You know, I'm the same as most people. I still worry about the distance that you can achieve.
Yeah.
And I do a lot of travelling up and down the motorway and I see the electric chargers pull up some stations.
That's the problem, isn't it?
And that worries me a lot. But I think...
Have you had a go in a Taycan? In a Porsche?
I haven't had a go, but I have got an electric motorbike at home.
Okay. Ah, right.
Most dangerous thing I've ever been on in my life.
Is it what? Just because it's so talky?
So talky. Yeah. So powerful. To get from 0 to 60 is unbelievable.
Yeah. Wow.
There's no going through the gears. It's like from 0 to a million miles an hour in nothing. And it's amazing. Wow. It's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, it's an amazing thing to have and to drive. But it's... It does worry me slightly at the moment, the electric thing. But listen, I'm the same as everybody. I think we're all going to be forced into it. I think hybrid, to a certain extent, is a more happier there at the moment.
Mm.
So, motoring itch yet to scratch?
I'm going to go for... now, I don't know the number of this car, but the Citroen Dianne... 1950s convertible.
Oh, ooh, that's interesting. You know that? Yeah. I do know the car you mean. It's a real sexy, kind of French, swoopy, beautiful.
Oh, my goodness.
Palomine's got one.
Yeah.
And they are stunning.
It's the most beautiful car I've ever seen. It's the most stylish car that you could ever come across. I would swap everything for one of those. Mm. It's just absolutely beautiful. And I will own one day. One day.
It's a DS.
It's a DS. So it's Citroen DS. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. The DS. 1950s, just beginning of the 60s.
Yeah, I mean, just,
DS.
Oh, my God. They are so sexy, aren't they?
That long body that kind of drops into nothing.
But you can't imagine that car in any way without the soundtrack behind it, I don't think. Don't you always just, you as soon as you mention that, already in my head, I've got French swooping music and I'm going through the Alps and everything.
Is that not Argentinian?
Who cares?
Brazilian.
You know what I mean?
That's the girl from Ipanema. Yeah,
you mean Edith Piaf or something like that? You were doing the girl from Ipanema. I'm not mistaken. That's Brazil, I think.
I think you're right. Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. Listen, we're just going to have a little momentary detour away from cars for a second. We've got a couple more questions to ask you, Martin. But before we do that, I want to ask you about the book, which is out at the moment. Tell us those looking for something to put on their Christmas list. Tell us about the current book.
Yeah, the book is called The Game.
Mm-hmm.
It's out now. It's my first piece of fiction I've ever written.
Yep.
You know, I've written a documentary. I've written biographies in the past, mm-hmm. and I've written film scripts in the past that have been made into movies. So kind of like it's everything. It's all of that and everything that I've learned along the way in how to write fiction. And it was something that I always wanted to go out. This is a story about a 80s rock star called Johnny Klein, who, see, my biggest fear when I was in the middle of the 80s, when I was in the band, was what would happen if by 1986, you know, we were probably one of the biggest bands in the world.
Yeah, for sure.
And even if I say so myself, right?
But you were. It's a simple fact.
You were.
Yeah, it's fact.
And so my face was on so many kids' walls and stuff, and you become like super famous in the rock world. But what would happen if all of that was taken away from you and you had nothing left apart from a famous face? And where'd you go with that? You know, how'd you live and get back into normal life? And what would the rest of your life be like if you were stuck with that hindrance of a famous face?
Yeah, that's an interesting
and
concept.
So it was something that scared me all the way through the 80s. So I thought that'd be a nice premise for a book.
Mm.
And so you're obviously writing a story about Johnny Klein, who is the protagonist here. You're allowed to heighten everything and to take him to places that are in your imagination.
Yeah.
And it's been such a brilliant process.
You know, how long did that take?
Probably on and off for about a year.
Okay.
On and off. You know, I can't tell you exactly because, you know, I do other things. So it's I can lock myself away in a room and just write nonstop. But on and off for about a year, it took me.
And was it a process that you enjoyed? Can you see yourself? Because obviously it's a very, very different discipline to writing a biography. Can you see yourself doing more fiction work?
Oh, I would love to do it.
Mm.
You know, I spent a long time in, just after I shot the Cray Swim film.
Yeah.
I went out and lived in Los Angeles for a long time, for about 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reading tons and tons of scripts. Now, when you get a script written in Britain, it's pretty much written in bullet point form.
Yeah.
Right. So it leaves like the imagination up to the actor,
mm-hmm.
how they want to put it in.
Mm-hmm.
When you read something that's written in the States, right, those big movies, they are works of art. They are absolutely beautiful. It's like reading the best book you can ever imagine. And I think my writing came from reading a lot of those scripts.
Yeah, okay. Interesting. Yeah, wow, that's interesting, isn't it?
The other thing, you know, was while I was out there in Los Angeles, I got into this thing of flotation tanks. Have you ever been in one of those?
No.
Never tried it, right?
I've heard of them, but I don't really know what they are, to be honest with you.
Well, I'll tell you, I'll explain it,
right?
It's a little tank that you close the door on. It's got about a foot of water in it, So it's pitch black, foot of water. The water is exactly the same temperature as your body, as your skin.
Yeah.
So you can't feel yourself floating in the water.
Okay.
In the salt water. Mm-hmm. And then what happens is the side of your brain that, you know, works on things that are directly in front of you closes down and you are left with your imagination.
Is that
and your
right?
imagination runs wild. Ah. And it's kind of like being a Tibetan monk who's been practicing meditation for years, but you get to cheat and you get to the top straight away.
Yeah,
you fast forward to the top.
I tell you what I'm thinking, Minority Report.
Oh, yeah. Honestly,
muses it in that suspended little bit of water.
Yes, and it's beautiful. It is absolutely beautiful, but don't do it because it's most probably disgusting in the water. You wouldn't like to think what goes on in that water.
Yeah.
So anyway, I spent a long time using those when I was out in the States. What I found now is when I get in the bath, I can kind of trigger myself into using my imagination in the same way. And that's where I kind of come up with a lot of ideas that
is
are
that
inside
right?
the book.
How much salt do you buy in your weekly shop then? Obviously a lot.
No, I didn't put the salt in. Someone else puts the salt in. You go to the flotation tank centre.
I know, well, what about you in your bath?
Those big blocks like my mum gets for a water softener. It's not like that, Jess.
Yeah, you put a bag.
Yeah, Martin's gone mental. He's throwing bricks in the bath. What's wrong with him?
Oh, yeah. Shirley's wondering why her skin's drying out.
Right, listen, Martin, we've got a couple more questions before we let you go because you're a busy man, what with everything that's going on. Right, here's the first of two. Of all the cars you've ever owned, you need to pick one and one only, because a repo man or something's going to take all the rest of them away, right? One and one only, and stick with it for the rest of your days. Which one is it and why?
I am going to go for the beautiful E-Type that I had.
Ah, yes. Hey.
I would go back there, no matter how dangerous it was to drive. Like I say, it was the only car I've ever had where people let me in, let me out of turnings and waved to me nicely. Mm. I would go back to the E-Type. You know, the funny thing about it, you know, I used to use that car all the time to you know, run the shops. I would use it as an everyday car. It wasn't just a special thing that I got out of the garage and used on a weekend on a country road. Mm. This was a car I used every day. And I would go back there. That's the one that got away for me.
You're in great company because we interviewed Jensen Button just the other day. And guess what? That was his chosen car. Mm.
Was it? Yeah.
Yeah, it was,
It's a thing of beauty. You know, it's absolutely, do you know, it's, for me, there's two things that artistically really please me when I look at them. And that's the E-Type and a Spitfire. And the two things go together.
Don't they?
It's the styling of them. I would keep the E-Type any day.
Well, also, Jason, didn't you say, was it Enzo Ferrari that described the E-Type as the most beautiful car ever?
The most beautiful car that's ever been created.
Which I tell you what.
And that was from Enzo.
Yeah,
it is. Yeah,
it's incredible.
It's the most beautiful car I've ever had. It's the most beautiful car that I think has ever been made.
So here's sadly our final question, but I think it's a belter. It's definitely up your strasse.
Yeah.
And that is, we believe that music and cars, you know, really well suited and they go together. So imagine your fantasy drive. It could be anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
I want to know where you're going.
Yeah.
What you're listening to, and most importantly, what you're driving.
Okay, so my fantasy drive always is along the south of France coast. It would be going from the edge of south of France, waking up in the morning, having my croissant, and then driving into Monaco through those tunnels.
Yeah,
right. You know where I am.
Windows down. Doing
a little bit of gaming in Monaco, and then driving the rest of the way into Italy for a bowl of pasta, fresh pasta in the evening. That is my absolute favourite drive in the world. Mm. I would be driving the old E-Type, right?
Good lad.
That is the perfect car for that. And I would be listening to Don't Stop Believing.
Oh, by Journey, really?
Journey.
Really?
I'd be listening to that. And that sounds like a perfect day to me.
It sounds like a perfect day to me as well, and a perfect way to end this, Jason, I think. And the only thing that we would need to do is perhaps be there by that little harbour in Italy with a nice bowl of pasta and a couple of cold beers waiting for him to arrive.
Yeah, you can be there any day, guys.
Do you know what? That's I've done that trip. It's epic.
So have
it's
I.
Beautiful. Yeah, yeah. It's beautiful.
The only problem is I had to stop halfway along because I'd eaten too many croissants. A little halfway stop.
Hang on. We've just painted this idyllic motoring picture in one of the most beautiful and picturesque parts of the world, and now all we can think about is you stopped at a services because you've got a slightly bad tum from all the croissants, Jason Plato.
Yeah. I had to stop there because I had terrible wind.
Jason, take us out, please.
Well, unfortunately, that is it for this week's Fueling Around. We can have spoken all day long. So that's it for this week's Fueling Around, powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help you save you money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance. Dave, as always, thanks to you. But a huge thanks to our special guest this week, the one and only Mr. Martin Kemp. Thank you, Martin.
Oh, thank you, guys. Listen, really enjoyed that.
No, it's been excellent. Thank you so much. Don't forget, you can catch Martin on Greatest Hits Radio. You can see him at any number of live gig events coming up towards the end of the year. And obviously his book, The Game, is out in all good bookshops and even some bad bookshops now. Don't also forget, you can get in touch with us on Twitter at Jason Plater, at David Ritty. And if you've liked what you've heard, feel free to give us a 5-star rating, press the follow button and share the podcast on all your socials.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll catch you next time. Ta-da!